everybody. Welcome to the A&N After Show. It's me, Lindsay Loveridge, and with me is James Beckett.
Hey, yo.
Hey, and today we are here to talk about live-action Chopper, whether he is cute or terrifying. Very important. This is for the second season of One Piece that'll be coming to Netflix. We've got a new trailer from The Summer Hikaru Died, which is one of the anime I'm looking forward to the most for summer season. So I'm going to show that to y'all. And then we're going to discuss the latest episode of Kowloon Generic Romance and Jiquax, as Gundam Jiquax continues to tie itself inextricably to original Gundam. It's pretty much inescapable at this point. So we'll try to answer any questions you all might have about that. Literally watched both episodes within the last 2 hours, so they're super fresh in my head, but that also means I haven't gotten to digest them up here very much. But
no processing time.
No processing time. This is just pure unfiltered reaction. First off, before we get started though, James, how are you doing?
Oh, you know, it's been pretty okay. A little dramatic.
Yeah.
More pet stuff. It never ends.
Yeah.
Our poor guy's been in a cone for the last 5 days.
I've Phantom?
Been on pet watch. Yeah. Got his, something weird happened with his butt, so we had to get that figured out.
Okay.
He's all right. No surgery, thankfully.
That's good. Yeah.
But he's still not happy. And I definitely got projectile vomited on yesterday, which was great.
By the cat or a By human? The cat.
No, okay. he was on the couch above me and he started yakking up and it just got all over me and the sofa. And
that's awful. I'm so sorry.
But hey, that's life.
Yeah. It's at least sounds like
what's been up with you? Any projectile vomiting in your life lately?
No projectile vomiting. I was talking to you off camera that I'm, you know, doing mostly boring adult stuff, like buying household appliances.
This, you know, I will say, as an adult, when you can finally afford a new appliance, there are few better feelings than replacing whatever old hunk of junk you got with something shiny and new that, because it's 2025, may only end up lasting like 5 or 10 years. I guess we'll see.
Yeah.
Depending on the product, hopefully.
I did, in fact, buy the extended warranty. But then as soon as I got out, my mom was like, I don't think you should have done that. And I was like, why? They don't want to give you your money. You're going to have to make a claim with, in this case, it would be Allstate. And then, because there's a thing.
Well, and she's from the era where things are actually built to last.
Yeah, that's true.
It's no longer the case.
Because, like, she had an experience specifically with a warranty thing where she said she probably spent over the course of several days going back and forth trying to. Because they had to make a claim with their homeowner's insurance once when there was a window leaking and the water got into the walls. And insurance companies, this is, okay, for fairness, this is circa like early 2000s. So I think there have been some laws since then. I don't know, or they've been revoked. But there was at least one point where I think they couldn't do this to you anymore. But they were telling her that if she made the claim, her home insurance rates would go up. Are you sure you want to make the claim about your window and the water damage that may be in your wall? Anyway, this is all stupid adult stuff, guys. If you ever buy a home in this economy or a new appliance, just be aware that they're going to want you to maybe buy some peace of mind. But what that peace of mind really means is spending a lot of time on the phone trying to get an insurance company to give you your money. So
they should make an anime about house flippers.
Why doesn't that already? That's going to be the next cute girls doing cute things.
Yeah.
Right. Like,
I have to assume it's maybe because a lot of people probably don't own houses in Japan.
Oh, that's true.
So there's probably not a lot of like remodeling happening on the regular.
Actually, even if it's not a case of not owning it, I remember talking to Richard, who lives in Japan, as well as Uehira-san, who I end up spending a lot of time with when I'm in Japan. And I think also Chris has told me this at one point. They tear stuff down. They don't really remodel. People don't want to live in someone else's house after they've moved in. So it's much more common to actually tear something down and just build a new one.
Huh.
Including like apartment complexes, all that kind of stuff, because people just want the new ones. I think also, I'm curious, I don't know if this is true, but it feels like something that exists so that construction companies still have work on an island that is full of people. And probably has all the over. Where would they continue?
You know, I forget that most places are not like the Midwest of America where you can just drive for like 4 hours and see no sign of human life. So, yeah, I guess it does make sense that you got to make room for new buildings.
Yeah. Wandering Dream says they did make an anime about a dragon house hunting. That is true. That looked pretty cute. I didn't watch it, but I do remember it wasn't just Dragon Goes House Hunting. I think was maybe the name of that. Mr. A says, wasn't Lord Frieza based on a type of house flipper? Is that a joke I'm not getting? Can someone elaborate on what that means?
I don't know.
A Reincarnated as a Washing Machine. We are getting season 2 of Reincarnated as a Vending Machine this summer, which... James, should we tell them about the upcoming change to preview guide?
Go, be my guest, yeah.
Okay, so for all of you that love and use preview guide, I'm excited to inform you that it will be even more useful because with the July summer season, we will be covering the first 2 episodes of all the shows instead of just 1. So I think this is the first time it's been announced, but it's definitely happening. And one of the things we had to do in order to make this possible is that you will see more of your favorite A&N reviewers in the preview guide this time, because we now have an A and a B team so that the usual 4 don't die. So that's my job, is to make sure that everyone can do their job successfully. So we haven't figured out exactly how the scheduling for that will work. It may be alternating days. It really depends on how the preview days all shake out. So yes, Nanigashi says Zack Era preview guides used to cover more episodes too. They used to cover 2 episodes back then as well. Notably, the show count I think was closer to 30 to 35 at that time instead of 60. The 60. So that's why we had to bring in some more people. So
is that how many we have for this season? 60?
I haven't counted, but it is a lot. I don't have a firm count. If anyone knows off the top of their head, you're welcome to throw that into chat. It already does look like we've got a couple days where there's 6 or 7 shows within the first week. It's crazy.
This is crazy. The one time ever that I'll not crumble into dust upon hearing that, because since it's my summer break, I actually will have more time to watch anime.
Yeah, more time.
More time.
Yeah, when this guide launches, it'll overlap with me being at Anime Expo, which I think I've brought up multiple times. The schedule for that drops on June 6th. So that's when we'll get to find out what all the panels are. That con already looks crazy as far as what they're planning to show. Like, so we're going to show the trailer for Summer Hikaru Died, but they're going to be hosting a premiere for that show with, I believe, the creator and the voice actor for Yoshiki Chiaki Kobayashi. But I also noticed another voice actor is going to be there, and I'm very, very excited. I need to get their signature on something or I will die. Megumi Obata is going to be there.
Jealous.
Guys. Megumi Obata. Shinji. She's Sailor Uranus, my first girl crush ever. She's
Toilet Bound Hanako-kun.
Hanako-kun and Toilet Bound Hanako-kun. That's her current work. She's
in every Danganronpa.
Yeah. Yes. Is she Monokuma? Is that why?
No. Okay. So no. She's Makoto in Danganronpa 1.
Oh, yeah. She's main character.
Gito in Danganronpa 2.
Yeah.
Is she in 3? I think she's in 3. She's not a main character in 3. Oh, and she's in 100 Line also.
Yeah. Yeah. So I have to find somehow to get her to sign things. I don't know if I should bring like my Ultra Mega Collector's Edition of Evangelion that G-Kids released and have her sign that. I don't know if I should have her sign any of my Sailor Moon manga or anime home video. I don't know yet.
I mean, if you could, like, if this is a long shot, yeah, but if you had time to maybe scour eBay or troll some what the hell are they called, thrift stores,
yeah
you could find an old cassette Walkman.
Oh man, that would be good. That would be so
good. I'll get her to sign like a blank tape that goes inside of it.
Yeah. Or just make sure that there's just a track 23. Was it always track 23 that Shinji was listening to?
I can't remember.
21, something like that.
I think it might have been, I want to say, all I remember is that it, I think it was 23 and it flipped to 24 in the rebuilds.
Oh, okay.
It was like a thing they did where.
Yeah.
One of those numbers.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, man. Okay. Well, yeah. So I'm super excited about that. They've announced a lot of really great guests. I've already started putting the schedule together and there's already things on there. Crunchyroll announced their lineup of all their screenings. And one of those days they have something like every hour in their designated space where they're either bringing people on stage or showing premieres or something. So yeah, shit's nuts. So anyway, that's Anime Expo. But without further ado, why don't we talk about Chopper First Look. This is for the live action One Piece series that'll be premiering on Netflix. I'm going to show the video and then we can discuss this interpretation of Chopper.
I just wanted to be known that I have been on the record that Chopper should have been a Muppet.
Yes, we have said that Chopper should be animatronic or a Muppet.
Chopper, you're
high. I knew they weren't going to do that because
we don't see you.
We know how Netflix treats puppet-based television.
Yeah.
Hi, Tadoom. My name is Tony Tony Chopper, and I'm sorry I can't be there in person, but... Oh, I'm supposed to tell you about One Piece Season 2.
There are some good clippity-clop noises.
Yes.
Help! Someone call a doctor!
I think the actress they got for Tony's great.
I am a doctor.
Tony sounds adorable.
Come on, Chopper. You can do it.
Oh, okay. One Piece Season 2 is coming in 2026, and you'll get to meet new friends, and foes, and me.
You did it, Chopper! Everyone, give him a hand!
Wait, is it over? Shut up! I don't need your clapping, you jerks!
So...
I mean it!
I don't know if this is just because this is like a little an advert, you know, and they're probably not like spending that much time and money compared to like an actual episode of the show.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm noticing something with the way that Chopper's mouth is being animated. It almost reminds me, the first thing I can think of is like South Park, where I feel like they have a set of different mouth shapes that they're cycling through, like not necessarily fully like frame by frame by frame. Or maybe it has something to do with like maybe some motion capture, something that they're doing.
Yeah.
Maybe to save time with animating the dialogue. I think my biggest question is, it's a fancy special effect.
Yeah.
How much of it can we actually expect to see in the show?
Right. Like another thing I noticed even with that short thing is, you know, he breaks out in dance there, but we don't actually see his feet. Like
yeah.
That part off screen while he's doing some kind of little jig or whatever.
Now that's classic anime ingenuity right there.
Yeah. The comments are, and James, do you think these are fair comparisons? Someone is calling him anorexic Paddington.
Oh.
Which is, I think that's a little rough. I mean, I could see like the velvet on his hat. Like they did the texture on the hat really nice. I think generally he looks cute. I am a complete One Piece newbie, so I don't know if that performance really captures how Chopper appears in the anime series. I thought he has a cute appearance, but maybe wasn't particularly cutesy otherwise.
I've fallen behind in my quest to catch up on One Piece. I've only just gotten introduced to Chopper. He definitely has like a rascally side to him too.
Yeah.
I think for me, the anorexia Paddington makes me sad, but I see the point in that I think the proportions look a little weird because, for instance, they're keeping the hat the same size that it is proportional to his body in the actual comic, but his expressions and his movement are much less cartoony. You know, he looks like a little photorealistic deer thing. And I think that is maybe where some of the disconnect is coming from, where it's like a weird half measure between just making him a cartoon character that lives in this world and trying to make him look quote unquote live action, almost like an in-between between like CGI Lion King lions and the actual Disney lions. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like his eyes are kind of small. His face looks kind of small compared like it looks a little odd. Like he looks like two different mediums getting mashed together.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the eyes could be a little bigger. Someone also much earlier before we started streaming said that he looks like, and I don't think it's quite this bad, but I can see where they're coming from, pre-redesigned Sonic. I don't think he's in that area of messed up facial proportions. I do think the eyes should be bigger just looking at it. But I do think they got the textures for a lot of things right. Like the hat mm-hmm. looks velvety and fuzzy. You can also see the velvet on his antlers like you would an actual deer who hasn't shed that yet. I thought the sound effects, like for the cloppy feet, were good. I noticed this when I watched it the first time that his shorts look weird. Like they almost lack enough detail to go with the rest of it. This is just paused on 1080 YouTube, which is probably not actually 1080 YouTube, but so they just kind of look like a blob of color here, like they were painted on top of the model, which yeah. isn't accurate to probably how they...
That's probably a compression thing.
Some of it, I think, is compression, yeah, but yeah, like maybe they should have put a little cuff or something at the bottom or a zipper.
Drawstrings
yeah. or whatever. It's just... The shorts look a little off compared to everything else when you can see the actual stitching on the X of his hat and things yeah. like that. Chad also pointed out that in a Variety article, it was stated that they did use facial motion capture for him in the show, but it's possible that wasn't used here for the promotional bit, like you were saying. So
I'm almost imagining like a really gussied up version of like an Avatar rig, because I don't think there's any way they can hand animate and... like fine tune the animations for this character if he's going to be getting a lot of screen time throughout a lot of the next season. So I have to imagine there's some kind of production streamlining approach where they can get the actress's performance, they can map it onto the 3D model, and then they can just integrate it into the footage relatively quickly.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm also one of those losers who has not finish the first live action season of One Piece. James, you did though, didn't you?
Oh yeah, I absolutely did. Yeah. My wife ended up watching it with me more out of just the fact that we share a house and I was watching it for the show. And when we watched it, she actually ended up really liking it and we ended up watching the entire thing together.
Nice. Yeah. Heaven or Hell asks, how are they going to get because he gets supersized. How are they going to get the transformation done? That's the question. I mean, if they can make the cute fuzzy rig, I'm sure they can make the Hulk size rig too. So
I saw, and this is, I saw no source to go with this. So this is complete just people online, but I saw a few different people mention that they had seen rumors or that there was some sort of rumor going around that the transformation for Tony was actually going to be either a full on, like real prosthetic so that it could actually interact in the fight scenes. Or a mix of like a bodysuit and an actual human actor with CGI applications.
So kind of like not a Kigurumi, because that's more like the pajama bit, but more like a baseball team mascot sort of situation.
This isn't a great comparison visually, but do you remember the Where the Wild Things Are movie?
I'm familiar with the movie, although I haven't seen it.
So in that movie, they have these like big giant like suits. These physical suits, but then the faces were animated with G. And I feel like it might be something like that, where like they keep some of the details CG to make it consistent, but so that you can actually like punch and stuff, they actually have a person in either makeup or with prosthetics or whatever.
Yeah, and Nanigashi brings up Big Bird. I was literally thinking of Big Bird as James was describing this. I'm like, okay, so like Big Bird, but with a CG rig face sort of thing, because it's just... huge. Mark, the top fabricator, also says something like the Fantastic Four movie is doing with the thing.
Yeah.
Are they doing... Okay, not to get too off on tangent, what are they doing with the thing in the new Fantastic Four movie?
I think it's something similar where like it's a physical suit that the actor is wearing. Like he can like touch things and grab things, but all of the face stuff is being added after the fact.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah, it seems like a lot of people are also on the same side as you, James, as far as he should have been a Muppet.
Yeah. Well, I know that one of Chopper's trademark contributions is he has the crazy animated bug out eyes, Looney Tunes reactions. And my worry with this model, because it's cute and it's nice, but because the face is so scrunched in and because there's not a lot of animation outside of the mouth.
Yeah.
My worry is that he'll end up ironically being less expressive than the actual live action cast members who like do go full on cartoony with a lot of their exaggerated facial expressions.
So, Yeah, I guess we'll have to see. That's a really good point to see how, if they'll be able to inject that physical humor out of this rig or not when it's supposed to be interacting with live action people in complicated prosthetics and everything. So
if any show could afford to take the Roger Rabbit approach, it'd be one of these.
Yeah. All right. The next thing we want to talk about is The Summer Hikaru Died. This is an anime series. It'll be nothing to do with One Piece, and it is a completely different vibe. I guess they're
not very cute.
No, nothing about this is cute. It's weird and gross and amazing. So for those of you who don't know, The Summer Hikaru Died, it's a manga series by Mokumoku Rin. And I think there are about 5 volumes out in English at this point, if you wanted to go read the manga. It's about 2 friends in a very rural area of Japan. And in this case, one of them goes missing in the mountain at one point, and then when he comes back, he's not the same, and his best friend Yoshiki is pretty sure that it's not Hikaru at all. It's some entity that is masquerading as Hikaru, but on the other hand, it's better than Hikaru just being dead, so let's just go about life as usual up to a point. But then a lot of supernatural stuff starts happening. If you read the manga, one of the things I love the most about it is how it uses onomatopoeia. Like, the sound effects in it are very intense and overwhelming at times for the art, which is really cool to see. And it's got a guy sticking his hand into another guy's chest just to see what that feels like. So
it's someone definitely watched John Carpenter's The Thing and thought, yes, but what if we made it gayer?
Yeah. So just to be forthcoming on this series, the creator themselves has not defined it as BL. It is not technically classified as BL, although there was a one-shot that was published before the series that was labeled BL. The series that came from that has not officially taken on that moniker. I think they're gay. That's my personal opinion upon reading the manga, is that, as James said, that it's gay. But, you know,
it's at the very least subtextually incredibly gay.
Yes, but if you happen to be going to Anime Expo, and if you happen to be getting an autograph or something from Mokumoku Rin, and you say, I love your BL manga, The Summer Hikaru Died, they might not
like
that.
Yeah. And I mean, I can understand that insofar as when it comes to BL as a genre, the genre conventions, the emphasis on romance and sex, that I can see why they might want to avoid creating that expectation when there's so much going on in the story beyond simply the relationship element. Yeah. I think of it like with I Saw the TV Glow, right? Very obviously, there are a lot of queer and trans themes running through that entire story.
Right.
It's very much rooted in what that story is. But I wouldn't classify it as like a YA drama in the same way that I would like a John Green novel, right?
Sure, okay.
Because it's doing so many other things with the horror elements and the psychological elements as well.
Yeah. So with all of that preamble, why don't we watch the latest trailer for The Summer Hikaru Died? This will be streaming exclusively on, I believe exclusively, but it will be on Netflix. It's premiering July 5th, I think. That's off the top of my head, so don't hold me to that. It's the first week of July for sure. All right, here we go.
Sound design is
so good.
Already, yeah.
James, do you think we're going to get a genuinely scary anime?
I was just thinking, so... I don't know if anime can be scary in the way that, like, a live-action film can be. I don't think I've ever seen animation good enough to necessarily trick my brain into thinking that, like, I'm in danger. But I think the best horror anime sidestep that issue by being emotionally upsetting and disturbing and digging into, like, really haunting themes and characters and their interactions. And I think that this story could absolutely exploit all of those things. Because, like, I don't think an anime is ever going to jump scare anyone unless you're really, really sensitive to jump scares. Like, it's your brain knows that it's looking at a bunch of drawings, right? It's not like in a movie where it can get tricked into thinking that you're actually there in the spooky dark hallway.
There's one anime that successfully jump scared me.
Really? Which one?
It's the first season of Yamishibai.
Okay.
The very first season of Yamishibai, there's an episode about a group that goes to, they just go ghost hunting at as an asylum. It's like a dare sort of thing. Like, oh, go to this abandoned building and wander around. And something like freaky happens there and they run out and they leave. And there's just, and these episodes are like five minutes. They're very, very short. But there's a part where one of the, I think it was the girl who went there, she starts getting texts. And it's one of those, like, she's getting texts and then her doorbell rings and it's something claiming to be the person she's currently texting. So you know it's not really them. And then she cracks the door open and the visual of what is there was scary enough that it was like, ah, sort of thing. But very, like, classic jump scare scenario. You can see it coming from a mile away, but they managed to pull it off by actually drawing something really scary. And if you've ever watched Yamishibai, the animation's really limited because they're imitating puppet theater too, so it's not like you have this very fluid, creepy animation. It's just managed to have a really good visual in that particular sense. When it comes to Summer Hikaru Died, the sound design for that was really, really good. I also, you got to briefly see the hand inside moment. It's the tail end of it, so it'll probably be longer in the episode that shows up in, but he puts his hand inside of his chest and then he just runs his hand upward to see, like, how up the open seam of his body, and you see his chin is split too. It's
so good.
I
always say Shiki is one of my favorite horror anime because even though it's not scary at all when it comes to the visuals, I find the things that the characters do to each other to be really horrifying and really upsetting.
Yeah.
And the kind of thing that'll stick in your brain after you're done watching it.
I need to go back and watch that because I didn't really have much of a feeling about that show at all when I watched it. I've seen the entire thing and I went into it being like, yeah, it's one of those, like, the monsters and within.
Yeah.
Not the outsiders, the insider sort of thing. And I don't know if I got hung up on the character designs or something. They're wild. But it just didn't really stick with me. And I watched it within the last 10 years, but I can't remember. It's been a while. So
I always think of it as like it's basically like the anime adaptation of Salem's Lot, right? It's like the Stephen King. Did you ever watch Midnight Mass?
Yeah, I didn't finish it, but I watched I watched like up to the reveal and then I was like, oh, okay, that's what it is. And I guess I wasn't like as into that, so I didn't watch.
So maybe it's not a vibe that, like, speaks to your, because like for me, Midnight Mass is one of my favorite horror anythings ever. Like I love that show.
Yeah.
And it's also basically just Mike Flanagan doing his own serial numbers filed off Stephen King adaptation.
Yeah, which is funny because I've watched a bunch of his stuff. Like I've watched all the Bly Manor. I've watched all of House on Haunted Hill. Was he House of Usher as well?
Yeah, he was.
I watched all of House of Usher. Like I enjoyed that one a lot.
Oh, yeah.
So I think it was just Midnight Mass, maybe specifically. But and it's not like it was a bad twist. It was just like once they revealed the twist, I'm like, oh, okay, that's the show. And I guess I just didn't care how it ended at that point. I don't know.
I mean, it's very similar to Shiki in that it's very much, it's more about watching these people respond to this, the threat as something that changes their humanity or whether they let it change them, right?
Yeah.
And again, in Shiki, when it gets to that climactic part, for me, I'm so much more interested in, if I was in this situation, which side would I fall on, or what side would my loved ones fall on? What would happen? I don't know. I love that stuff.
You know something else that makes you feel that way? Expedition 33, Clair Obscura, when you have to make the final choice in that game.
I haven't gotten there yet. Don't spoil it for me.
I won't, but both of them will make you sad, James.
I'm sure.
Both of them will make you sad.
When I beat the prologue of that game, I knew that it was going to rip out my heart and stomp it to pieces, and I'm all for it.
Oh, man. I need you to finish that game so we can specifically talk about Seal, the character, because her entire arc has permanently fucked me up, and I may never recover. So, that's all.
That is a recommendation. That sounded, I feel like that might have sounded sarcastic. No, like, that is the exact kind of thing that makes me want to play it.
I tried to talk about it with my husband, who didn't get as far as I did in the game, and then just basically asked me for spoilers for everything and quit playing it. And I was trying to explain it to him, but I couldn't talk to him about it without crying. So it's just like, I'm ruined. And I've been playing Fantasy Life.
To recover.
Yes. Yeah. It's the only way I can recover. All right. So that was Summer Hikaru Dai, top of my most anticipated, which we will have a full list of ANN's editorials most anticipated coming for you at the end of this month, by the way. But go ahead and sound off on the comments if there's a show that you are most looking forward to right now. I'd like to, it's a pretty stacked summer. So there's so many options that I'm just curious. James, do you already have one picked out, or do you need to comb through?
I need to comb through. Every year, I feel like my most anticipated anime, when it's not the really obvious choice, it ends up being really disappointing.
Uh-huh.
And so I feel like I might be cursed. Like, I picked Your Forma for this season.
Yeah. And then it airs only on Samsung, like, microwaves.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And then, I mean, G-Quarks is also on there, and it went to freaking Prime. And so I'm trying to be really careful with what I pick.
Yeah.
So, because I know whatever
for the rest of us, you know?
Yeah. Yep. It's going to be streaming on freaking HGTV Plus Ultra. You know, they're going to get their bid in the streaming wars.
We do a Girls Band Cry again, and it can be on Hoopla.
That was pretty wild.
Yeah.
I'm so curious what happened there.
Yeah.
I wonder, it has to be the music, right? That's almost always it.
I feel like,
licensing for the music and the performances.
Yeah, because the girls in that band are in a real band that will be performing at Anime Expo as part of the concert series that they're having there. Again, Andrew, NOS Anime, says he's looking forward to City, the animation. That is a completely valid choice. It's Kyoto Animation's adaptation of the Keiichi Aoi new manga. And it looks like, what's the other one that everyone loves that he did? It looks like that Redux. I'm trying to think. God. Ordinary.
I'm blanking.
Ordinary Life or something like that. Help me out, guys. New Panties Stopping looks good. Yeah.
What's the name of the... It's not a show, I don't think. I think it's a series of movies.
Yeah.
But is it coming out this summer or is it this fall? The guy that did... I'm blanking. The director of Kite and Mezzo Forte?
Yes, I know who you're talking about. It's
Virgin Punk.
Virgin Punk. And... that is coming to theaters. I think it's a series of films. So I'm curious what the streaming situation for that is going to be, because the first one is supposed to premiere late June. So
that's what I thought. I knew it was coming soon.
Yeah. Yeah. Nichijo is the one that I couldn't think of. That's the other one by Keiichi Aoi. It means everyday life. And it's like ordinary life. What is that? Yeah.
We got a release date for that. The Madoka movie. While Park is Knocked or
Winter. Okay. Winter. So that's a ways off. Cat 1721 says Pokemon Concierge season 2. Yeah. Those aren't puppets, but I was gonna say those are the puppets we need.
Stop motion puppets and anything tactile. We need more of it.
Yeah. I'm a complete sucker for that show. Like, when the first season came out, they came out with a bunch of merchandise that was specifically referenced the items from the hotel in there. I was like, yeah, I'll buy all of those. I didn't, but I really wanted to. It's all really, really cute. I'll let you guys keep sounding off on series that you're looking forward to. But James, we got to talk about G-Quarks, because G-Quarks, even as someone who watched the three films this year, I think there was some context for me missing. Maybe it's just missing completely and it's not a matter of me not remembering things. But we meet Lala Soon.
Yeah, we do.
In this episode. So let me... Char's mommy girlfriend. Let me open up our pictures here. She's on the swing set, which you see her in the original series also on the swing set. But like one of the things that I don't recall from the movie cuts, and maybe it's in the TV cut, is that she was working in a brothel before Char bought her freedom.
I do not think that was explicitly referenced in the original show.
Okay.
I could be wrong as well, because I've seen the movies and I've seen part of the original show, but I honestly can't remember if I've seen the Lala Soon. It is explicit in the original show. Okay.
Okay.
So that might have been something that got cut from the movies. That
I remember her living in this house, like in a fancy looking house, but it just looked like it was like a homesteading fancy colonial sort of house, and I didn't recall like seeing other women living there or any of that sort of thing. Wandering Dream says that it comes up in the origin manga as well. But in this episode, yes, it's very obvious. And I will go off the top by saying, I know I'm beating a dead horse at this point. This episode should have been three episodes. This should have been three episodes. Machu should have lived in the same house as Lala Soon for at least two, to get acclimated to the environment, to figure out what was going on there, to figure out what Lala Soon's deal was, and then, you know, her dreams about leaving and all of that, and have a buildup, and then they try to escape, and the sort of sacrifice happens at the end of this episode, right? You can't put that all in a single episode, as well as her flashback to escaping. It's not working, and it's making me mad.
Oh, I thought it worked pretty well.
Yeah.
I was surprised, because at first I thought they just completely skipped the escape.
Yeah.
Which I honestly could have worked, I guess. Like, you could have just explained it and then spent more time at the manor. This is where it is hard for me to, I can't like unwatch and unknow the original Gundam context.
Right.
So I don't know how much of my willingness to just like go with it is just rooted in the fact that I'm not really super concerned with all of the fan service that they're throwing in, or all of the we should probably, it's not even fan service anymore, we are explicitly connecting this to, if not literally the original timeline of the original Gundam series, then other timelines of the original Gundam series that are much more similar to what we saw in the movies and in the show.
And I just want to say that if the audience would like to go back about two episodes of the ANN After Show, they'll know that me, Lindsay Leverage, fucking called it.
You did.
I told you all that there was timeline jumping, that it was a multiverse thing, and that that was what was happening. As soon as that Gundam disappeared the first time, and we didn't know where they went, and they can't find Char, it's like, there's timeline jumping. They're jumping around between timelines. Yep. And it's real. And I was right. And I don't get anything for it. There's no reward. There's no trophy for calling it again. So I just need everyone to acknowledge that that happened. If I had time before watching the show and this, I would have clipped myself and replayed it like I did last time. But I didn't have the time. But I just want
to... You'll get your snaps at least, Lindsay, because you called it 100%.
I called it. All right. So yeah, we have Lala Soon here having a conversation with Machu about how she knows that her visions are actually seeing what happens in alternate timelines, and that she's always meeting up with Char, and that in the other timeline, he loses his life fighting against the Federation's white mobile suit, which is what happens in OG Gundam. So.
And this is where there's a little bit of ambiguity.
Okay.
Because in the original show, spoilers for the original Mobile Suit Gundam, by the way, in case you were planning on going back and watching that. In the original show, Lala Soon dies protecting Char from Amuro.
Yes.
And this
creates a big guilt complex for Amuro and stuff when that happens. Yeah.
And she blows up. Like, she's dead.
Yeah.
And so it's unclear, to me at least, if she's referencing other timelines where she also failed to jump in front of the laser beam and explode.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, like, the end-ish of the original show, like the last few episodes. Or if she's also referring to, like, spoiler alert for other things in the Gundam Universal Century, things that happen later on in the timeline, specifically with Char's counterattack.
Yeah, I assume this was a reference to Char's counterattack. But yeah, it's possible that it is just another alternate. Since she does say, I failed to protect the people that I care about, right? Another very small nitpick about this episode and why it needed to be more episodes is because this is the first time Machu goes to Earth, something that she's been wanting to do forever and ever, and wants to see the ocean. And it's not until the end of the episode when she's reuniting the plane piece that blew off the G-Quux with the main body in the ocean that she actually gets to go there. And you may have noticed that while she's going down there, there's jellyfish everywhere. Her favorite thing. It's on her phone, pictures in her room. She doesn't say anything about the jellyfish. James, if you're obsessed with jellyfish, it's like basically a persona thing. Like, it's probably her icon on whatever her messenger is. You know, it would be a jellyfish. You think when she first got to see them in real life in the real ocean for the first time, something? This is, again, maybe I'm being nitpicky.
No, you're not. It's just like with every other episode, the show is very much concerned about getting through the plot. Yeah. And it is not dilly-dallying for anything.
Yeah.
I, too, would love if this had at least been like a 26-episode show.
It should have been. It's Gundam. You can tell me they can't convince people to fork out enough money for a 26-episode Gundam series when the last one sold so much stuff. Like,
I wonder if it's more a Kara thing.
Like, they're too expensive?
Or they just have too much to do other stuff, like, on the docket. Is the space battleship, is that a live action that Anno's doing?
We don't know. I think actually hasn't been confirmed whether Gin Yamato is animated or not.
So it could be that Kara just didn't want to commit to a full 26-episode production cycle. Yeah. I mean, this is the first TV anime, right? Like, this is the first weekly
Kara TV anime?
I think. Possibly? They did the Dragon Dentist?
That was like a mini-series.
That's like a one-off.
Yeah, that was like a special or a mini-series. I was trying to think, like, there was that Ochibi-chan thing that was based on Yoko Ono's thing.
But that can't have been like...
It wasn't, you know... As far as I know, they haven't made anything of this length, TV length, you know, intensive since.
And the production has been really consistent so far.
Yes. So, not an ugly episode in the bunch.
Do you remember when in G-Witch, when what's his butt got that awful haircut?
Yeah, that was so sad.
And then they kept drawing it wrong, so it looked worse. It looked like he had a bunch of bubble gum stuff.
Yes. He just looked like he had a bunch of bubble gum. Yeah. So, yeah, maybe there will be a surprise season 2 announcement, but that doesn't rectify the pacing issues I'm having with season 1. Yeah. If this was 12 episodes and I thought it was really good, but how the heck are they going to get anything done? Then I could say, well, maybe there really is going to be a season 2 because there's no way they're wrapping this all up. But again, it still feels like they're speedrunning.
Maybe they'll do an ending movie.
They could do that. That'd be very Kara to do that. What else do we get? I mean, we don't see Nyan at all in this episode. This is purely a Machu episode, just like the previous one was a Nyan episode. We do have Zaddy Chalia Bull here. He basically just used Machu as not bait, but I thought she was going to make some grand escape.
No, they just let her go because they wanted
to follow her wherever she's going. But we don't know who was texting her.
I think it's Char.
You think it's Char?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Because we saw that. We didn't have time to talk about it in the last episode. But at the very, very end of the last episode, there was a cute blonde guy with most of his eyes getting covered by his hair.
Yeah, yeah.
Definitely voiced by the same guy that voices Char.
Yeah.
So that's where Char's at.
He shows up at like an airport, but he's with someone. Right?
Yeah. We have no idea who that is.
We have no idea who that is.
Well, no, we do. She is, what is she, the daughter? I think she's the daughter of the scientist guy that told him about new types way back in the 70s.
Okay.
In the Gundam movie and in the flashback episode.
Yeah, I'd probably recognize him if I saw him again. Yeah. It's just not ringing a bell immediately. I like this theory that people are saying in chat that it's the G-Quux that's texting her specifically. Oh, yeah. Which, right.
And I wonder if G-Quux is an alternate time. Because at the end of the episode, we find out that another Lala Soon in her Elmeth, her little Kabuto helmet-looking Gundam, is like, in this reality, she like hopped over and there's now two Lala Soons in the same reality, which is probably not good.
I saw some people were discussing whether that was Lala or whether that was Sayla.
So Sayla was in the...
Sayla was in that flashback. The Solomon, where like Char and her see each other for the first time, I think in a long time.
Yeah, she was flashback. In the not... RX-78 Gundam, the what's it mm-hmm. called? She was
wasn't the it the one gun was, cannon or something?
Yeah, thank you. The gun cannon.
Yeah.
The Elmeth is specifically Lala Soon's ship, and they specifically say that in this timeline, the one where we saw Sayla and the fighting, they never finished that. They never even completed it because they never needed to because they got the red Gundam and that's how they won the war. But we did see that ship in the original Gundam. That's what Lala was piloting when she exploded.
Oh, okay. That's why it did look familiar to me then. That's Lala's. Yeah. Okay. Trung Thon says that the person texting is Amuro because it mirrors the conversation of Amuro guiding Frau and the three kids escaping Ao Biao Q. I hope I did that right.
Oh, okay.
I mean, that would be funny. Everyone's been wondering where Amuro is, speculating if, you know, he's
say that they don't want to reference Amuro because of all the crap that happened with his voice actor.
I mean, I'm sure they just cast someone else, guys.
No, yeah. Amuro is dead to the Gundam.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Could you imagine if they just completely killed off the character? I mean, there have been other shows that have done that, but that would be crazy. Random thoughts. I can't believe Haro hid so that they wouldn't be taken to the brothel with Machu. Laugh out loud. That's that is funny. Haro in the vacuum sealed bag on the ship was also pretty funny.
That's great.
Yeah. So I feel like I'm following the plot. Okay, even as a Gundam newbie, but my main complaint continues to be the pacing and what I feel like is a sacrifice of the character development for characters that aren't pre-existing. See, the pre-existing characters come with some baked-in personality and purpose. Like, you don't need to go over Char's backstory all over again in this. Everyone just knows Char, so... That's where I'm at with it, but you could still pull it all together by the end and we'll see what happens.
I think for me, the only major thing that's really lacking for me with the new characters is I like Machu a lot and I like Nyan a lot. And I think the last couple of episodes have actually done a lot to make me a lot more invested just in their individual characters. Mm-hmm. I like Nyan's whole journey of self-discovery with Zeon and the G-Fred. And I like Machu's just full-on rebellion and screwing off to Earth, even if it was maybe a little rushed. The one thing that I think, at least as of right now, is really only working on paper and not really like emotionally, is I'm even blanking on the dude's name because he's such a non-character. The Red Gundam boy.
Oh, Red Gundam? Oh, Shuji.
Shuji. I kept wanting to say Eiji. And I'm like, it's not Eiji, it's Shuji.
But, when you said random Gundam guy, I was thinking of the MP, the military.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I don't remember his name either. So,
Shuji to me, I think is, I don't know how well he works. He's barely a character. You know, I mean, he acts like he's drugged out on Quaaludes. You know, you don't even ever really get the sense that you're seeing like the real guy or any of that. He's kind of like if Rey from Evangelion was only ever how she was in the first episode of the show.
Right, yeah.
She's just a plot device that, like, occasionally drops some lore hints and then disappears for a while.
Yeah.
Maybe they'll be able to change that in 3 episodes.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe if we're lucky. I'm kind of waiting for the other shoe to drop on him and we're going to find out he was, like, made in a lab or something. And he's just, like, an escaped... Like, those other new types, the artificial new types, the... Mm-hmm. New type. Yeah, like he's going to be one of those, and so he has literally no concept of anything other than talking to his Gundam. Something else, this was another reason why I wanted the episodes to be longer. I was actually a little bit interested in the maids.
I love them.
There was something going on there. One of them was really pissed off. Hated, apparently, her life in that house for a multitude of reasons, and she's like, yeah, burn it to the ground. I was like, this lady's got something going on. I want to know about her. And
I was assuming that the maids were not, I'm assuming that the maids probably didn't have a say in whether they got included in the brothel activity.
Oh, I mean, yeah, you can draw some pretty obvious conclusions that they've probably experienced abuse of some kind in there and things like that. Or at least one of them, maybe one of them's coping a little better because she was like, well, we have a nice place to live and food to eat. And if you go into town, everyone's starving. And the other one's just
example of a thing that a longer Gundam show would really spend time with is like
going into town for some errand or something, so you can just see how badly the people of Earth are living. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and the fact that someone might actually be able to say, like, yeah, I'm a teenage girl working in a brothel for a bunch of rich military types, which is awful. Yeah. But I personally think it's better than starving in the street. Like that's a social psychological dichotomy that like you'd see in any number of Gundam shows. They probably devote a whole episode to it.
Yeah. Quanti5 says they thought the maids were undercover rebels, like that attack a couple episodes ago. I don't know. It seemed like they were mostly motivated by a love for Lala, which again could have been expanded if we had had more time to figure out like why they, because my understanding, even though they call her mistress, is that Lala is just another brothel member like anyone else. She's not running the place like mistress might immediately imply. So they bonded for some reason. We don't really know why. And they want to help her escape, which she isn't able to do ultimately. That's just, it's all the setting and the groundwork is so good. I just wish we got to play around with it a little more.
I agree.
Now, when it comes to Kowloon, though, again, it's just sort of like mystery reveal, new mystery sort of situation here. I will say off the top, I do think we're experiencing a little bit of animation breakdown. Like there are some parts.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
We are. And I think this is where, speaking of mysteries and pacing.
Yeah.
I think we finally reached the point where there is more table setting than we have one really interesting and sad character interaction with
Yami.
No. Why am I blanking on names all of a sudden? Must be the long COVID. What's the main character's name?
Reiko,
thank you.
Yeah.
My brain is for some reason stuck on Eiji, and I wanted to say Reiji. I'm like, her name's not Reiji. That's stupid. So Reiko and the way that she screws up the toast.
Yeah.
That was like a really sad and really human and really interesting
bit
of drama there at the end.
Yeah.
But so much of this episode is just talking about generics and zirconians and the rules of Kowloon and like the way the food affects you or doesn't affect you and what the plan is to enact revenge on crappy rich dad
and double crossing or blackmail.
And then whatever is going on with the Zhao He and like the double crossing there and the plan to maybe kill Reiko.
Yeah.
There's so much going on with the plot that this is an episode where I felt like I was being read a bunch of cliff notes.
Uh-huh.
Even though there is really cool stuff still happening in the show.
Yeah. And I think that's fair because I was talking to, it may have been Jackie, about the manga. And I think she was saying that they were adapting close to a volume in an entire episode. And it's gotten to a point now, especially in this one, where that was felt a lot more. The other ones had good pacing and however they were slimming them down and giving you information, like switching between characters. This one was a lot. The only thing we get with Reiko and Kudo really in this episode is their post having consummated a relationship. Reiko is over the moon with it. Kudo continues to be a weird jackass that I can't quite get a read on all of the time. I think being in Reiko's apartment really messes with him. And this was another time where Reiko wasn't able to do something exactly the way he remembered previous Reiko being able to do it. And he just can't handle it. And he bails on her. And in this case, it's because she doesn't know how to make French toast. And to be fair, these are Japanese people living in Kowloon. I don't expect French toast to be like a common menu thing. It seemed like until past Reiko made it for Kudo, he'd never had it before.
Yeah.
And as far as I know, you actually don't make French toast usually in a toaster oven. So while they were showing that, I was like, that's not how my mom makes French toast, but whatever, that doesn't mean you can't. So that kind of falls apart. There's a long scene in the cafe of Gwen, Reiko, and Yaomei talking to each other that basically culminates in Gwen figuring out that if you eat the food in Kowloon, you forget things. Which does make me kind of want to go back to that one episode where the little girl just had like that brain glitch. Remember when she tried to talk about leaving and then she kind of glitched out?
Yeah.
If she was eating something in that moment.
But okay, so but here's the thing. I was under the impression now that that's just the generic of Big Xiaohei, who is actually a guy. Because he talked about how like he used to wear...
Oh, I didn't even connect dresses. That those were the same people.
I thought that's what it was getting at. I don't think it said it like
I didn't realize they had the same name. Mm-hmm. Oh, that makes so much more sense. Mm-hmm. Okay, because I felt like he came out of nowhere. And I was like, why are we adding someone to the cast this late in the game? Like, it's already a big cast. And so you're right. Then that would be the generic of him. And the grown version is the one working for Miyuki's dad. Mm-hmm. Although he's being blackmailed now at this point by white-haired guy whose name I can never remember in order to kill Reiko. Mm-hmm. And it seems like the main players of this... So we've got a conspiracy still about original Reiko's death. Has something to do with the Heavy Newman Corporation. We have no idea what exactly happened. We know Kudo blames himself for it for whatever reason. They looked into thinking it was her sleeping pills, but it's not that. Kowloon may have been destroyed specifically to cover up whatever was going on with this medication and Reiko's death. So we have all of that, but none of that is actually talked about in this episode, really. This episode is Gwen yelling after Miyuki in an alleyway. I did enjoy that bit of soap opera drama.
It was good.
But it is mostly white-haired guy, Xiaohei, and Miyuki's dad and Miyuki stuff. And that is so tangled.
It is.
Up. And maybe the doctor, too.
Yeah, well, he and white-haired guy and Miyuki are, like, in cahoots.
But also at odds, because they don't really agree with what Miyuki's doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it seems that's... The details of that relationship, I'm assuming, are maybe a little more clear in the manga, or more clearly explained. And it's weird that's become kind of the main plot of the show.
Yeah.
Reiko's kind of become a side character, a little bit.
Yeah, at least in this episode, for sure. And I don't... See, probably one of the other things that led me... or confused me about Xiaohei as far as their identity is that when he was talking to Miyuki's dad, they showed the portrait and I thought it was trying to allude to Xiaohei being like the real son.
Yeah, I thought that too. That was,
but the son's dead, or at least Miyuki thinks he's dead. And it was implied that Miyuki made some sort of choice to join the Heavy Numa family, and that it's not just a result of him being like an illegitimate child. So I just, there's a lot of context missing from the family relationship entanglement there that I haven't quite figured out. Yeah. And I think it can be disorienting when you're watching the show. You're just like, can someone just finally say the thing out loud so we can
well, have I'm still clarity like, I'm here. Still, well, and like, we still don't even know. So Zirconians are clones, right?
Yes, like, yeah.
They're made clones that the Heavy Numa Corporation wants to be able to make, but they can't yet.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're talking about how Reiko is key to the Zirconian plan working.
Yeah.
And that's another thing where I'm not even really sure what the plan for the Zirconians. I'm assuming it's related to the uploading all their memories to the...
Yeah. I think it is specifically creating a perfect clone of the dead, right? Because that's what they were talking, like.
Like that Black Mirror episode, but yeah. Better.
Like yeah, a better yeah, version. I think so. I think that's what it is. It's a matter of actually being able to bring the dead back to life, so to speak. Riz is saying they cut out a lot of the Miyuki scenes, and in the latest episode, you're starting to really feel the consequences of that. Okay, so there's been maybe in the manga more time spent in Miyuki's head and what he's...
Which is wild, because we spent so much time with him the past few episodes anyway.
Yeah.
The fact that there's even more Miyuki stuff that we're missing.
Yeah, can you refresh me on the previous episode? Why is Miyuki sending a gift basket to the brothel? Oh, because when he fainted...
They rescued him from fainting.
From fainting. Okay, that's what that's all about. Okay. Yeah, which, I mean...
Also, why can Kudo eat food?
Yeah, well, I mean, Kudo... I think Kudo is actively trying to completely live in Kowloon and doesn't really care about differentiating between what's real and what's not. And I think that's a grief response.
Yeah, but... Like with Yaume, the minute she drinks that tea or that soda or whatever from Kowloon,
yeah,
she starts to like lose her sense of
anything she did outside of Kowloon. Yeah, yeah. But I mean,
food all the day, or is it? Can he only eat those
dumplings?
The dumplings, is that like the one food that's okay for him to eat?
Yeah, I don't. I mean, he doesn't leave Kowloon though either. He never goes back and forth. So. What would he be forgetting when he eats if it's specifically things that you know or learn about outside of?
Well, I mean, he knows that Reiko is not real. He knows that Kowloon is not real. He knows about like real green hair guy versus
Gwen. Yeah, that's Gwen. True.
He knows about the real one versus the not. Like, he doesn't seem to be suffering from any like cognitive or any reality based, like any reality warping or anything.
Yeah,
they keep implying that like he's involved with whatever the heck Hebinuma is doing with Reiko, like he's
her existence or something. What episode are we on, by the way? 8? 9?
I think we're on 9.
They don't have that much more time.
I think we only have like three more.
Yeah. So I mean, we should be, and this manga is over, so I mean, we should be getting kind of to the bottom of all of this. I'm just hoping it doesn't devolve into a lot of like someone talking to me through the screen to just tell me things, because I liked it when it was more implication
yes.
sort of thing.
Yeah. The first episode I think is a perfect example of we just got to live in that world and the unknown strange elements got slowly introduced.
Yeah.
I feel like the last 3 episodes have just been a lot of explaining and then introducing new things, but then explaining. Like, it's felt very exposition focused.
Yeah. Chat said the silver-haired guy's name is Yulong. It's been about since he showed up. Ever since they introduced Yulong, it's been a lot of that. Yon says the anime will get an original ending. What are you talking about? Why? What? How do you know that? I thought the manga was over.
Maybe it wasn't over when they started.
Well, nowadays they also work with the manga creator pretty closely a lot of the time. So if it was close to the end, they may have very well told them the ending because the episode will air after the final volume is out. But, volume 11 just came out in April.
So not over?
No. Okay. No.
Well.
We'll see what happens. That's a little concerning, for sure. And we said earlier, so the animation throughout this episode is entirely functional. There's no sliding and zoom-ins on inanimate objects while people talk to cover up a whole bunch of stuff. But the character designs have gotten, they were, especially in the face, much simpler throughout this episode, I think, so that they could probably maintain a level of movement while getting rid of a certain level of detail.
Well, and you really notice it, like, when they have a near the end, they have that close-up when Reiko puts on the glasses again.
Yeah.
Because she's feeling kind of desperate.
Yeah.
And, like, this is not as on model as you probably would have been, like, 5 episodes ago.
Yeah.
But even this is more detailed than what we get, especially
earlier in the episode.
Yulong, I feel like, especially is a character who, like, he almost seems like he's animated from a different show a little bit.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's because he has like that kind of snaggletooth smirky design, but
yeah,
I feel like a lot of his scenes, the consistency gets a lot less consistent.
Yeah. Yao Mei here. It's a decent perspective shot for what they're trying to do. Okay. They're trying to do film up from the camera to show like how nervous she is to drink the iced coffee because she doesn't know how it will affect her, but it's
rough.
It looks a little rough with the line work. I've definitely seen worse, but it was reminding me of some isekai series I've seen when they start to get this. Mm-hmm. It's a similar sort of thing with as far as the simplification of the line work in the face and the limbs and stuff like that. Reiko,
I think if anything helps the show, it's that's not exactly out of keeping with a lot of those like mid-90s shows
where it
falls off halfway through.
Yeah.
You could maybe argue that stylistically it's...
Yeah, but Reiko hasn't really looked nearly as hot as she did No one's been hot lately. So that's a little...
Even the sex scene, or the sex aftermath, wasn't
When he like pulled her arm away from her face to like look at her, I was like, she's supposed to look glowing in this moment, and I'm not getting glowing, you know? Yeah. And I think I noticed it an episode or so ago, but this one like really cemented it.
Yeah,
for me, as far as what the issue was.
It's a shame. Like you said, it's not enough to like ruin the show, I don't think.
Yeah. But
I think it makes it easier to maybe get a little frustrated with some of the story or pacing issues because we no longer can be distracted by the production.
Yeah. Yeah. Like Miyuki's supposed to be really hot and they weren't looking nearly as hot in this episode either. So
no, he kind of looked a little frumpy in a couple of shots.
A little frumpier or just a little pale, and his lipstick wasn't glistening. That small detail sort of stuff that is important. Man, I'm going to be thinking about Zhao Hei now for a while, though. I liked how Yao Mei put frills in his vest for him, though. That was really sweet. So that was one really sweet, like gender-affirming kind of moment there for him. All right, everybody. I think that wraps us up for this week. We will be back next week on what day is that? What's the week?
The 10th.
The 10th at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. We'll have a little interview, I think, edited for you by that time. Don't hold me to it. It might be the week after, but it depends on the video team can squeeze it in. But I talked to those fun guys over at Quest for the Best today. We have them a little guest video there for you in a week or two. So until then, we'll see you next week. Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
The AN and After Show is an official podcast of Anime News Network. You can hang out with us live on Tuesdays at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern on YouTube and Twitter. Listen to our podcast on Spotify or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. The AN and After Show is hosted by Lindsay Loveridge and James Beckett and is produced by Lindsay Loveridge.